Welcome to the Deep Dive. We take sources, complex information, and distill it for you. Today, we're really digging into the history of the U.S. Air Force Search and Rescue Task Force.
Yeah, and our main source is pretty compelling. It's a firsthand account from a YouTube video, episode 52, the USAF Search and Rescue Task Force, over on the Military Tales channel.
And speaker in that video, John Larrison, he was right there at the beginning, involved in the very early combat SAR ops.
Exactly. So we get this incredible perspective on how it all started, you know, back in the mid-1960s, and how this critical mission grew, straight from someone who lived it.
Right. And Larrison, he just drops us right into this mid-60s scenario. His first assignment, it had this cover story, pilot training.
Yeah, kind of wild. He had no clue it was actually laying the groundwork for combat search and rescue.
So our mission really is to unpack those origins, understand how this crucial task force began, and look at the early challenges they faced, all through the lens of episode 52.
Okay, let's get into it. Those early days and that cover story. Episode 52 really dives into this. Larrison shows up, fresh out of pilot training command, and he literally doesn't know what plane he's going to fly.
That says a lot about the secrecy, doesn't it? The classified nature of it all.
Absolutely. And initially, as he explains in the video, the focus wasn't even the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which you might expect.
Right. He talks about supporting Vietnamese ground forces, mostly, in South Vietnam. Later, some U.S. units, too.
Yeah, close air support stuff. And he mentions, interestingly, back then, if a pilot went down, it was often just, you know, an Army helicopter nearby that would pick them up.
So completely different from the dedicated SAR task force that episode 52 is all about, the one that eventually formed. What pushed that change?
Well, a big piece Larrison highlights in the video is the Geneva Convention at the time. The agreement was no introduction of modern weapons.
A diplomatic point with real operational consequences.
Totally. Yeah. It forced them to use older aircraft for these, well, often clandestine missions. They needed something reliable, but, you know, compliant.
Which leads us straight to the A-1E Skyraider, right? That's a fascinating part of episode 52.
It really is. A Korean War era plane the Navy was actually phasing out.
But it was available, could carry a lot, and crucially, they could bring it in under this pilot training cover story Larrison talks about.
And get this. He mentions flying actual combat missions with a Vietnamese airman in the right seat who didn't speak English.
Wow. So much for training, huh?
Mm.
Clearly a cover. Shows the kind of improvisation needed.
Definitely. Episode 52 paints a picture of real ingenuity born from necessity. And then, Larrison says, things shifted around mid-65.
Okay, what happened?
The U.S. side basically determined the other side wasn't sticking to the no modern weapons deal. So more modern jets started arriving. Like the F-100s where he was.
And that shift, as episode 52 lays out, seems to be the direct trigger for the start of real combat SAR.
Pretty much. The catalyst, Larrison explains, was U.S. jets getting shot down. Specifically around SAM sites near Hanoi after Reese flights in mid-65.
Those surface-to-air missiles, a huge threat. So losses started mounting.
Yeah, sounds like it. And in response, this is a key moment in the episode. Larrison gets this top-secret mission. He leads a flight of four A-1Es to Udorn in Thailand.
Okay, what was the initial plan there?
Initially, just low altitude support, about 30 miles west of Hanoi, ready to help helicopter pickups if needed, basically on standby.
But things changed fast, didn't they? Episode 52 makes that clear.
Oh, immediately.
Yeah.
Larrison says they were on alert and boom, an Navy A-4 goes down, about 150 miles north of the DMZ.
The demilitarized zone, heavy area.
Very. So they scrambled. And this is where the HH-43 helicopter comes in, nicknamed Naked Fanny at NKP, Nekon Phanom.
Right. And the A-1Es, what was their role in that specific rescue attempt?
Minimal ground support, basically. Trying to suppress any enemy fire near the downed pilot so the helicopter could get in.
But there were issues with the helicopter.
Big time. And Larrison's telling of this in episode 52 is really gripping. The HH-43, also called Pedro, it just didn't have the legs. The range wasn't enough to get the rescued pilot all the way back to Udorn.
And Udorn was important because
Secretary of Defense McNamara was visiting Udorn.
Mm.
So, you know, the pressure was immense to get this pilot back successfully and probably quickly.
Okay, so the helicopter's short on range. What happens? This is where Larrison steps in, right? A young captain.
Exactly. He overhears the chatter about the Pedro not being able to make it back to Udorn.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows his A1E. He knows it has longer range.
And he had some extra gear.
Yeah, he mentions in the video having a spare parachute and helmet because they sometimes carried a crew chief, so he thinks, wait a minute.
And he actually suggests landing his A1E at NKP on that temporary runway.
Yeah, a PSP runway pierced steel planking.
Yeah.
He suggests he can land there, pick up the pilot from the Pedro crew, and fly him to Udorn himself.
Yeah.
Pretty bold for a captain.
That really shows that adaptability you mentioned, taking initiative.
Totally. And as episode 52 recounts, that's exactly what he did. Lands the A1E at NKP. Pilot gets transferred over. Larison says he never even properly met the guy.
Just focused on the mission.
Right. Pilot gets whisked away in staff cars as soon as they land at Udorn. Mission accomplished, thanks to this captain's quick thinking.
And then comes that almost unbelievable part of the story in episode 52, the intelligence briefing.
Oh, yeah. He gets pulled into this briefing with three full colonels.
And they have no idea what his plane is.
None. They didn't know what an A1 Sky Raider was, what it could do. Larison mentions they were shocked it could even carry nukes for the Navy.
Wow. That just highlights how ad hoc things were initially. Lack of communication, maybe.
It certainly seems like it. That disconnect Larison describes in the episode really shows that sometimes the crucial stuff bubbles up from the ground level out of pure necessity.
Not always a neat top-down plan.
Definitely not. And right after this incident, Larison says, A1E started deploying rapidly to Udorn. And then the 62nd Fighter Squadron gets established at NKP.
So that marks the real beginning of the dedicated Star Force buildup. It wasn't planned from the start. It just sort of evolved.
Exactly. Born out of crisis and individual initiative, just like Larison's story shows in episode 52.
And from that point, things started to get more formalized. Tactics developed.
Yeah, episode 52 touches on that. The learning curve. Figuring out the best way to do these incredibly dangerous rescues. It was an ongoing process.
He also mentions the HH-3E helicopters arriving later, the Jolly Greens.
Right. And interestingly, Larison notes, his own initial training, before all this, was actually focused on Apollo capsule recovery support down at Patrick Air Force Base, flying H-3s and H-53s.
So a very different kind of mission focus compared to the guys trained specifically for combat SAR later on.
Completely different skill set, yeah. It highlights how specialized combat SAR became.
What kept these pilots going, though? In episode 52, does he talk about motivation? It was incredibly high-risk work.
He does. He speaks very personally about just wanting to get one successful pickup.
Yeah.
And the feeling when they did, rescuing a downed airman. He describes it as almost narcotic, that intense feeling of accomplishment.
A powerful drive. You can understand that.
Yeah. It clearly had a profound impact, not just on the person rescued, but on the rescuers, too.
And the video, episode 52, it gives hints of other intense missions later on, right? Oyster 02, the Tanwha Bridge rescue.
Yes, he mentions those, reminding us this wasn't a short-term thing. The danger and intensity continued. Episode 52 really drives that home.
And you can't talk about SAR without mentioning the support aircraft, the HC-130s.
Absolutely critical, nicknamed King. Larison emphasizes their role in episode 52. They acted as the airborne command post, coordinating things.
And refueling, right, for the Jolly Greens.
Crucial air-to-air refueling. He talks about relying on the Kings for gas deep inside North Vietnam sometimes. They were the lifeline that extended the reach of the helicopters.
Indispensable. He also mentioned something about training airborne mission commanders, AMCs.
Yeah, setting up a formal training process. And he points out in the episode something pretty sobering.
What's that?
These AMCs, the ones coordinating these complex high-stakes rescues, they were often young captains, mid-20s.
Wow, talking senior pilots through rescues, making huge decisions under fire.
Exactly. Incredible responsibility on relatively junior officers.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 52 really makes you appreciate the weight on their shoulders.
Which brings us to the end of Larison's presentation in episode 52, where he reflects and pays tribute.
Yeah, he's very humble about his own role. He says his real purpose in sharing these stories is to honor the heroes he heard over the radio.
The Jolly Greens, the A1 Sandy pilots covering them.
The FAC's forward air controllers, including the Ravens guiding everyone in. Even Air America crews, who often played unsung roles.
And he names specific call signs in the episode too, doesn't he? Ashken 01, Falcon 7-4.
Gunfighter 8-2, Nail 3-1, Alpha and Bravo, Spectre 2-2. Yeah. You can tell those call signs, those missions, are etched in his memory. Sharing them feels like a real act of remembrance in episode 52.
That story about the great Easter egg hunt of 1972, that sounds intense.
15 survivors rescued. He describes it as chaotic, but ultimately this amazing coordinated effort.
Yeah.
A testament to how far they'd come, but still incredibly difficult.
And his final message in episode 52.
Simple, powerful, Bravo and Sierra Hotel. Which means good job to everyone who took part in those missions. A perfect closing tribute.
So, wrapping up our deep dive based on John Larison's account in Military Tales, episode 52, We've seen the unexpected start of USAF Combat SAR.
Yeah, born from secrecy, evolving rapidly under pressure. We've seen the ingenuity they needed with, frankly, limited gear early on.
And just the immense bravery and dedication of those pioneers, people like Larison and all the crews he mentioned.
And hopefully for you listening, this gives you a deeper appreciation for this slice of military history, straight from someone who was there. It's full of those surprising human details you don't always get.
It really makes you think, doesn't it? You look at those early, almost improvised missions Larison describes, and then you think about modern SAR today, mm-hmm. with all the advanced tech and established tactics. What remains the same? What are those fundamental elements?
That courage, maybe, yeah. The coordination under pressure, that absolute commitment to bring people home, which comes through so strongly in Larison's account. It's a great question to ponder.
Definitely food for thought. And if this has sparked your interest, you really should check out the full video.
Yeah, absolutely. Episode 52, the USAF Search and Rescue Task Force, on the Military Tales YouTube channel. You'll get even more detail, more stories. It's a really valuable piece of history.